Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A little later this afternoon, the U.S. Senate is set to vote on whether to end debate over a massive 900-page bill aimed at modernizing medical research. Of course, Massachusetts has large biotech, pharma, medical devices, and basic research sectors, so the bill matters a lot around here. But maybe you hadn't heard of it until, say, a week ago. That's when Senator Elizabeth Warren stood on the Senate floor and thundered against the legislation.
In the closing days of this Congress, Big Pharma has its hand out for a bunch of special giveaways and favors that are packed together in something called the 21st Century Cures Bill.
Well, in fact, Warren herself worked on the 21st Century Cures Bill for the past 2 years. She even wrote parts of the $6.3 billion legislation. But when the latest version of the bill was quietly released by Republicans over Thanksgiving weekend, Warren was outraged.
A bill that is supposed to be about medical innovation has a giveaway to the gun lobby. The bill cuts Medicare funding. It raids money from the Affordable Care Act. It takes health care dollars that should have gone to Puerto Rico. It makes it harder for people with disabilities to get Medicaid services. There is a lot of bad stuff in this bill. And when the American voters say that Congress is owned by big companies, this bill is exactly what they're talking about.
That's Senator Elizabeth Warren on the Senate floor a week ago today. So we've got kind of an interesting situation here. A popular Massachusetts senator is objecting passionately to parts of a major bill that could be a significant boon to Massachusetts. She says she supports scientists and research, but not the big industries that could also benefit. And she's getting passionate pushback from those very same scientists and researchers. In a moment, we'll talk with one of those people. But first, let's get some more details about exactly what's in the 21st Century Cures Act. So joining us now is Victoria McGrain. She's national political correspondent for the Boston Globe, and she joins us on the line from Washington. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Hi, glad to be here.
So first of all, this is a 900-page bill. There is a lot in it. How long and how involved has Senator Warren been in the 21st Century Cures Act up until now?
Well, as you said, she's a member of the Health and Education and Labor Committee in the Senate, that where a lot of this work was done. So she was very involved. Her big push was to get that funding for the National Institutes of Health, the medical research funding in there, to complement what the Republicans were pushing for, which is changes to the process done by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, trying to like speed up the review process for drugs and medical devices.
Yeah, so we'll talk about more about those two things, the NIH funding and changes in sort of FDA oversight in just a second. But that sort of leads us to really what's at issue here is that this bill is huge. It has something for everyone. It was receiving lots of bipartisan support. At what point in time, though, did Warren, even though she says she supports a lot of it, feel so strongly that she had to come out against it? When did that change?
Well, she had a colleague of mine had wrote a story back when the original version of the bill was passing in the Senate, and you saw Elizabeth Warren raising some concerns. But what really changed was that there had been these closed door negotiations going on between Democrats and Republicans trying to get a bill that could pass both the House and the Senate. And that bill was released the Friday after Thanksgiving when nobody's paying any attention, and it suddenly looked a lot different than what Democrats who were not as part of that small inside group were expecting. And so that's why we saw Elizabeth Warren take to the floor a week ago, because the latest version had just been unveiled a few days before.
I see. So just again, we're going to get into the details in more detail. Sorry, we're going to get into details more a little bit with the next person we'll talk with. But I just did want to ask you, Victoria, what does our state's other senator, Senator Ed Markey, have to say about this? Because the bill also includes, $1 billion in funding for opioid addiction treatment and research?
Yes. So Senator Markey, the last I've heard from his office, and I was that he is still deciding what to do. He has been pushing very hard for that opioid money. And, you know, this bill in a lot of ways is sort of, artfully designed to put Democrats in this tough position of including these good things that they've been working on, but has some things that they would not like to support. So we'll see what happens tonight.
Mm. And now I see that Governor Charlie Baker has actually spoken out about this as well. What's his position on it?
He put out a statement, interestingly, at the urging of the Obama administration. So the Obama administration is publicly on record supporting this, has been lobbying people on Capitol Hill to vote for it, despite their concerns. It's an interest. You know, it's sort of a classic Washington conundrum. You just saw that Elizabeth Warren would not disagree with any of the same things, you know, that Charlie Baker or the Obama administration says are good. She's just saying it's coming at too high of a cost. The trade-offs are not worth, you know, the promises of future funding. That money is not guaranteed. That research money and that, you know, that the trade-off isn't worth it is kind of the crux of her argument.
Right. Now, the bill did pass the House last week, right?
Yes.
And it passed what? Overwhelmingly, I'm seeing something like
overwhelmingly. I think there were 26 no votes. Some of those were very conservative Republicans who I think were objecting to the spending of money, and then some more Democrats who had shared Elizabeth Warren's concerns about the trade-offs in the bill. But yes, overwhelmingly supported bipartisan bill, which you do not see around here that often these days.
Right, and they're taking a cloture vote in the Senate. So for those of us who don't really remember Robert's Rules of Order here, remind us what the cloture vote is all about.
That means to end debate needs 60 votes. So this is when people talk about a filibuster, for the Senate to formally move on to voting on the actual bill itself. 60 senators need to say, okay, we're ready to end debate on this bill and move forward. So it's kind of a higher threshold than your 51 majority.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would set up a vote, I believe, for tomorrow to vote on the bill itself.
And is it looking likely to pass the Senate?
Yes, I believe so. I haven't seen any sort of hard numbers, but you know, the clock is ticking, and only a handful of Democrats have come out to even really harshly criticize the bill publicly. What my sources tell me is, you know, privately, a lot of Democrats are are concerned about the funding issue, the fact that this money isn't guaranteed to ever show up. It's, you know, the Senate in future years will have to vote and say, okay, we're actually going to spend this research money that we say we're going to, but that, you know, they don't have any leverage to make it better, that this is the best bill, that this is the bill that's there, and they don't feel like it's worth voting against it.
Right. Well, Victoria McGrain is national political correspondent for the Boston Globe, bringing us up to date on the politics behind the controversy that's currently surrounding the 21st Century Cures Act. Victoria, thank you so much.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Well, I should say that we also put out a request to speak with Senator Elizabeth Warren today. Her office said she wasn't available to talk with us today. But we do have what she said on the floor of the Senate, and we're going to be hearing a little bit more of that in a moment. Now, biotech research and development are big parts of the economy in Massachusetts, which is why members in those sectors have been calling on Senator Warren to change her views and support the 21st Century Cures Act. So joining us now is Robert Coughlin. He's president and CEO of the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council. He joins us to talk about the effect he believes that this bill could have on Massachusetts. Robert Coughlin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I mean, what's your primary message to Elizabeth Warren? What are we at risk here with her opposition to the 21st Century Cures Act?
Well, there's a lot at risk, not only for the economy here in Massachusetts, but for patients of the world. Massachusetts is in the business of innovation and drug discovery. We're the best place in the world for this business, and 21st Century Cures will enable us to continue to lead the way and do better. and we think it's important that she supports it.
Mm. Well, so let's get to the details here, because it is a massive bill, more than $6 billion on the line with this legislation. And the senator has said she's very supportive of key parts of the legislation, but she came to oppose it. One of the reasons was that most of the $4.8 billion in funding that initially had been guaranteed to the National Institutes of Health in an earlier House version has suddenly been turned into discretionary spending. I mean, in other words, that money is going to be released in future years only if Congress votes to do so, to give it to the NIH. And she doesn't actually think that's likely to happen, since Congress has already reduced funding for medical research in previous years. So Robert Coughlin, stand by with us, because I want to hear a little bit more of what Senator Warren had to say about NIH funding last week on the Senate floor.
Adjusted for inflation, federal spending on medical research over the past dozen years has been cut by 20%. Those cuts take the legs out from under future medical innovation in America. You know, we can name a piece of legislation a cures bill, but if it doesn't include significant, meaningful funding for the National Institutes of Health and the Food and Drug Administration, it won't cure anything.
Robert Coughlin, respond to that, because doesn't she have a point here? I mean, if it's up to Congress to renew this discretionary spending, it's not a guaranteed sum of money. It's not a guaranteed revenue stream for future research for Massachusetts companies.
Well, you could argue that at least to have the ability to have discretionary funding there is a step in the right direction. It's better than not having any. You know, the American people clearly are upset because of inaction in Washington, D.C., and with the 21st Century Cures Act, has gone through years of deliberation. And, you know, you could argue as well, by the time consensus is built around any issue, there will most likely be something in it that you may not agree with, but you need to ask yourself, does the good in this bill outweigh what you may disagree with? And for Massachusetts and for patients, the good far outweighs what Senator Warren thinks is not good and the 21st Century Cures Act.
Hmm. Well, so let's take another look at sort of another part of what she thinks is not good. Because, again, I take your point that it's the sum of these things that
Absolutely.
People have to balance out.
Absolutely.
So she also talked about a provision in the act that she says would loosen FDA authority, because this new version of the bill, it includes cuts to Medicare and also these rules that would allow drug makers to market some products to treat conditions that were actually not part of their initial FDA approval. And she calls it, quote, legalizing fraud. That's Senator Warren's word. And basically she says that this provision in the act is a workaround around current law that restricts companies from marketing drugs that have only been approved by the FDA for specific uses. So here's what she said.
Now, some drug companies find this rule annoying. After all, they could make a lot more money selling a headache pill as a cure for everything from hair loss to cancer. But pushing treatments without scientific evidence that they work is fraud, fraud that can hurt people.
Again, Robert Coughlin, on this specific point, isn't she making sort of a powerful argument here? It is loosening FDA oversight, is it not?
No, it's a horrible argument, and fraud is a terrible word to use when people are dying. I mean, this would permit the FDA to consider real-world evidence to supplement data from clinical trials and drug safety monitoring. It's not going to reduce the FDA's high standards for safety and efficacy. What it will do is expedite the time it takes to invent a drug. If an existing compound that we know is safe could work for a different disease or indication, isn't that a good thing? I came to this industry because I have a child, a 14-year-old son, that has cystic fibrosis. There isn't a treatment available to him today. Wouldn't it be good to know that if there were drugs that were on the market for other diseases would work in cystic fibrosis, we could get that to my son before he dies? That's what this is about. It's not about fraud. It's about expediting the drug discovery and approval process so that we can not only save lives, but reduce the overall cost to healthcare by making people well.
You're not concerned that it could potentially cost lives? Because, I mean, you say real-world evidence, and I'm seeing that as a sort of part of the language around this bill, but that's not the same standard as those drugs that have gone all the way through clinical trial for specific diseases.
When my son was born 14 years ago, I thought that there would be drugs that work for him, and there still isn't. We're running out of time. When you talk about risk to benefit ratio as it results to, as it relates to somebody who's dying, a loved one that's passing away, I mean, the risk is worth it. It's about sacrificing efficacy, and if it's real-world evidence, the drug is already proved to be, sacrificing safety, rather, it's already proven to be safe in people elsewhere.
So on that point, Robert Coughlin, let me just present one more of Senator Warren's arguments to you, because I really appreciate hearing your response on this, because
okay,
one of her underlying critiques here is she sees the bill as having morphed into a bunch of, in her words, sort of government giveaways to big companies. And here's some context. I just want to present this to listeners. We've seen reporting that, you know, some 1,400 lobbyists acting on behalf of more than 400 companies have lobbied about this bill. And the companies who disclosed that they've lobbied on the Cures Act, they say they've spent $500 million to influence Congress. And Senator Warren sort of focused on what she says is one particular outcome of all this lobbying that we see in the bill. And that is, there's a part of the bill that would move to speed up the delivery of cellular and regenerative therapies, so adult stem cell therapies, and that those therapies could go to patients. Those therapies could go to market before they're definitively proved to be safe and effective. So here is what Senator Warren said about that.
It delivers a special deal so that people can sell these treatments without meeting the FDA gold standards for protecting patient safety and making sure that these drugs actually do some good. You know, keep in mind, people could die from using unproven treatments.
Now, Robert Coughlin, in this case, regarding these particular therapies, Senator Warren says that the bill would allow them to go to market even before they've gone through effective safety testing.
Well, I find it hard to believe that the FDA would be approving anything that wasn't proven safe. And first and foremost, you have to realize that people are dying if they don't receive therapies anyway. So again, what is the risk to benefit ratio? We're looking at moving forward as it relates to regenerative medicine, precision medicine. What's next as it relates to these breakthrough therapies? And this bill provides the opportunity for companies to do that. In Massachusetts, we have over 800 smaller companies that are doing research and development right now in these areas, and this bill will enable them to be more successful. It's a good bill for Massachusetts, and it's a good bill for the patients of the world.
I've seen people talk about how the fact that this 21st Century Cures Act, people see the best of Washington bound up in it and also the worst of Washington bound up in it. Is that your view here? And I mean, I guess you kind of said that you really don't think we can get anything better out of it right now.
Yeah, well, let's at least get something. Let's see some action down in Washington, D.C. All of our members of Congress, the House of Representatives, voted in favor of this bill. All of them. They see, and I'm sure by the time there is concurrence on any legislation, whether it's here in Massachusetts or down in Washington, D.C., there's always going to be something in there that you may not think is perfect, and you know, you can't let perfect be the enemy of the good. And in this situation, I would argue that Senator Warren agrees with a lot more in that bill, and if there's just a couple of pieces that you don't disagree with, let's try to fix that later. But let's not throw everything out because of a couple of pieces that you may not agree with.
Well, Robert Coughlin is president and CEO of the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council, a group that represents more than 700 biotech companies, academic institutions, and other organizations. We're going to be digging more deeply into specifics of the bill later on this week because it's big, it's complicated, and it matters a lot here. So, Robert Coughlin, thank you so very much for helping us get this conversation started.
Thanks for having me.